Hi, everyone. I'm Tara Mont, and you're listening to the Trust and Thrive with Tara Mont podcast, where you can find a new episode released every Thrive Thursday. I am a current clinical psychology graduate student, passionate about all things to do with mental health, relationships, healing, self-reflection, and other topics that influence us in our everyday lives. I created this podcast to hopefully inspire others to live their most authentic life and to share insightful and honest conversations with everyday individuals and informed professionals. Although the show is not a replacement for therapy, I hope the conversations had can inspire you to look within, to practice self-compassion, to gain more awareness, and to trust the process of your unique journey. If you resonate with the message of Trust and Thrive, make sure to subscribe and stay tuned. You can also stay connected by following me on Instagram at Trust and Thrive. Thank you for being here. Now let's get right into this week's episode. Hi, everyone. Welcome back to Trust and Thrive. I'm your host, Tara Mont. And we are back today with a guest episode. We have a lot of great conversations coming up. So to introduce this week's guest, her name is Amber Benziger. Amber is a licensed psychotherapist, anxiety coach, and speaker located in southern New Jersey. She is the owner of Vitality Behavioral Health, where she specializes in anxiety disorders, burnout prevention, and trauma therapy. Amber is also the creator of the Anxiety Lab, which is a one-of-a-kind membership service helping women manage and cope with anxiety through education, compassion, and community. To learn more about Amber, you can visit vitalitybehavioral.com or theanxietylab.com, and you can also follow her on Instagram at amber_versus_anxiety. So in this episode, we touch on, of course, the topic of anxiety, but we also discuss stress, burnout, how those all connect, how anxiety relates to perfectionism, the hustle culture, how social media can really lead to comparison and more anxiety, especially during the pandemic. So I think this episode is very relatable for anyone who has an anxiety disorder or who just struggles with stress in general, who doesn't. And also we discuss self-care, which is obviously a topic that is so important. And at the same time, it has become such a buzzword. And I feel like it's easy to get discouraged if you think, well, I'm not trying to do the self-care that the celebrity does or what this person can do because I can't afford that or I don't have the time. But really finding what works for you and really checking in with yourself, especially now. So once again, you can follow Amber at amber_versus_anxiety. And you can also follow me on Instagram and TikTok at Trust and Thrive. And if you've been enjoying the show and would like to leave a rating and review, you can do so on Apple iTunes, Apple Podcasts, and it really, really helps the show. So thank you in advance, and I hope you enjoy this episode. So let's get right into it with Amber. Hi, Amber. Thank you so much for being on the show. I'm really excited to have you here.
Thank you so much for having me. I'm so excited to be here and talk about anxiety.
Yes, definitely. So can you start off telling us about what you do? I know you discussed anxiety, but what specifically inspired you to get into the work you're in and a little more of your background, if you can share?
Yeah, absolutely. So I am a licensed therapist here in the state of New Jersey. And I also have a membership service exclusively for women who are experiencing anxiety. So I do a lot of like group coaching in that aspect. But I've struggled with anxiety for a large portion of my life, probably since I was a teenager. And it really like came to a head when I was in college. So it's been something that I've been battling and then something that I've really been passionate about helping people with.
Thank you for sharing that. And I think a lot of people do struggle, whether it's with anxiety or mental health issue, and it may become so normalized for them. I know I have experienced anxiety my whole life, but I thought it was my personality for a long time. And do you think you've struggled with that as well? And like, what made you reach out for help and realize that this isn't okay?
Yeah, absolutely. I think there was a lot of things that I thought were just quirks or was just me, or I was being dramatic. I feel like that was like what was projected on me as a child. So I just thought like, oh, this is me. And then I would, you know, have this like perfectionist tendency and, it, you know, people kind of appeal to that, because they're like, oh, you just want to get straight A's and you just want to strive harder. But like, I was putting so much pressure on myself at times, making myself sick, that I didn't really even know that, like, oh, wait, this is an issue. And, you know, stemming from anxiety. So when I got to college, I had a panic attack, and I ended up working in my college counseling center. So I went there and they were like, yeah, this is a panic attack. Like, you're a pretty anxious person, Amber. And it was like very eye-opening to me in that moment. That, wow, maybe I need to make some changes.
And I'm glad you mentioned like the straight A's, because I think that's an example of like a socially acceptable like behavior that we think, well, if you're a good student, then how is that a problem? Or if you work too hard, or if you're a workaholic, whatever it may be, or, you know, we kind of like joke that perfectionism is our weakness, but people actually try to see it as something good when it actually can stem from anxiety. I've definitely dealt with that. And so what are some general like signs someone could see if they experience like perfectionism, or they like to work a lot? Like, how can they differentiate between really caring and being passionate about something, and maybe it's stemming from anxiety?
Yeah, I think a lot about listening to your body and how are you feeling? Like, how are you feeling after you're doing these things? Do you feel happy and accomplished and like, okay, this is what I wanted to do? Or is there like a lot of dread and exhaustion and like burnout? And also, like, what's your intention behind doing these things? Like, are you doing them because, again, you want to, they bring you joy and they're fulfilling? Or is it you feel like you have to, or you want people to like you or think you're doing well? So I try to be a little more intentional and always remember, like, just because I have the capability of doing something doesn't mean I have the capacity to do it. So really, you know, trying not to say yes when I want to say no, and really thinking about my intention behind the decisions that I make.
Mm-hmm. I'm so glad you mentioned that, because especially with COVID last year, specifically with the lockdown, I feel like, at least for me, being home, I thought like, well, I'm technically free all the time, so I can just jump on a Zoom. I can just, you know, do this happy hour on a Zoom or this call, thinking that, well, if you can show up a lot, it's a lot easier to, but my emotional capacity maybe is not there. So do you feel like boundaries are really essential in this case when it comes to, you know, burnout and stress in general?
Yeah, absolutely. I think knowing your limitations and really sticking to them. And I think we talk so much about setting boundaries with like other people, but setting boundaries like with ourselves and really sticking to them and holding to them and not breaking our own trust is going to teach us how to do it with other people. So really thinking about the things that you're committing yourself to, and being okay with saying no and not even having to give an explanation for it, just really owning that this is what's best for me in this moment and being okay with that decision for yourself.
I love that. And I know we kind of touched on burnout, but can you maybe give a general explanation of what stress looks like versus burnout? Because I think it's so easy to assume they're one and the same, but I know you have some really informative posts on that, and we'll make sure to include your information in the description of the episode. But can you give an idea of what stress looks like versus burnout and what's the difference?
Yeah, absolutely. So, I mean, we're all going to face stress sometime in our life. And we really saw that again, you know, with the pandemic. But, you know, feeling like overwhelmed or like something's bothering you, you know, that's stressful. But burnout is where like you can't do it anymore, where, you know, like you feel physically ill, or you feel like, I can't go on. Like, I can't do this job anymore. I can't get out of bed. It's where, you know, it's a complete shutdown.
Definitely. And, you know, because I think there is that misconception that burnout is like one event. And maybe for some people, it is like that one panic attack. Or I've heard stories about people working in the corporate world and they just, you know, broke down or had a panic attack and they thought they were having a heart attack. And then they realized they needed to take care of themselves. But can you talk about how maybe burnout may not even be clear? Like, it may be happening over time and we think we're fine, but we may not recognize the physical symptoms or what's going on internally.
Yeah, definitely. I think that burnout is a buildup. It's a buildup of all that stress and anxiety and perfectionism. And we kind of just continue to push through because there's like that hustle culture of just keep pushing through, just do it one more time, you'll be fine. And then it lands to like, you can't. So when you start feeling yourself, like, I know for me, like, I need to take a step back when I start getting a lot of headaches because I'm not taking care of myself. When I start to feel like snappy or frustrated, or I'm agreeing to things that I don't want to agree with, or agree to, just really taking a look at like how you're feeling. Is your mood changing? Are you showing up different? Are you enjoying things that you used to enjoy the way that you do, or do you even have time to do them? So really like, what is your day-to-day looking like? How are you feeling on that day-to-day? Mm-hmm.
And so in your own life in general and what you've learned through your work, what are some tips you have on managing stress? I know everyone, obviously their form of self-care and what makes them feel good looks different, but some general tips on managing your stress over time so that you don't lead to burnout. What is that? What can that look like? An example maybe.
Yeah. So I'm a list person and like a to-do list person. I love that crossing out, but sometimes I feel like we put so many things on our to-do list that it's overwhelming. So really taking a step back and just only putting like a few things, like maybe three or four things that you want to do. And then don't just incorporate things that you need to do in your week, but also things that bring you joy and stick to them. You know, like if it's going to that yoga class on Thursday nights at 6, then go to that class on Thursday night at 6 and really make that a priority for yourself. I think that we're constantly prioritizing things that we need to do, but we forget about things that bring us joy. So I think that's really a great way. And then, you know, putting things in that are routine that you can stick to. I know like, again, there's a lot of buzzwords around like self-care and things like that, but morning routines and nighttime routines can be really helpful. They don't have to be extreme or super long, but I know for myself, like I journal every night and that's really helpful to just get it all out, like a brain dump of all the things that are flooding my head. So just like knowing that I'll have that is a nice way to end the night.
Definitely. And I'm wondering if you could relate to this at all or if you have experienced this, but I know for me with my anxiety, I used to have a perfectionist view of self-care even. I thought like, okay, this is going to be my day that I relax. And I was anxious if it wasn't like perfectly, you know, like I'm not relaxing the perfect way or not doing all the things. And I think that's like, it's the opposite of what I'm really supposed to be doing for myself. So do you think like a perfectionist version of self-care is also, you know, something you've seen how that can be harmful too? Like it may not be work, 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 but even seeing self-care as like, it has to be done perfectly can also be a part of the problem.
Absolutely. I can relate to that so much where I thought it had to be like, I mean, again, I love fancy spa days and beautifully buttery soft leggings, but that doesn't have to be self-care. You know, sometimes it's just taking a nap or watching that same Netflix show for the 30th time. You know, what do you need in that moment? I think that's really about what self-care is. Like, what do you need? Do you need a day off? Do you need a trip? Do you need a talk with your best friend? Like, what is it that you feel like you need that's going to kind of fill you up? And not about what other people are thinking or their standards are. Because again, that's not really self-care. That's you fulfilling a need for somebody else. So like, again, it's that what's your intention behind it? Is this because you need it and it's helpful to you? Or because you feel like it's going to look good or be pretty in your Instagram feed or whatever it is, you know, make sure that you're doing it for you.
Exactly. And I've talked about this in a past episode with a therapist who focuses on self-care, how it can be very discouraging if we see people, you know, like celebrities, like, oh, I just took a month off to travel, or like I gave my kids to like the nannies or something, and now I'm getting like on this vacation and you just do that too. Or, you know, you see green juices, you see like a very specific view maybe. And then there's like a single mom with working two jobs saying like, I can't do that. Like, that's not realistic for me. And so do you think that, I mean, have you seen how discouraging that can be and how important it is to find your version of self-care? And sometimes I feel weird even using that word because people, I think, associate it with like, you know, checking off the boxes of doing these specific things. But like you said, it's really about being in tune with yourself and what you need in the moment, even if it's 10 minutes, you know, to meditate or do something that makes you feel good. Is that something you talk about with your clients and have noticed that people feel discouraged because they see unrealistic, maybe standards of even self-care?
Yeah, absolutely. I feel like, you know, like we said, it became such like a buzzword in this thing. So then it's something else that you have to strive for. And it takes away the entire meaning of self-care. Like, it's really not about self anymore. We have this ideal that we need to compare, right? And social media can kind of exasperate that for us, that wanting to compare and wanting it to look a certain way. So really taking that step back and saying, A, like, is that realistic? And it's probably not. And then checking again with what do you like to do? Like really looking into your inward with yourself, like, what do you like to do? What makes you tick? And what works with your schedule? What's realistic? Cause like, don't overly schedule things that you know you can't do, or try to, you know, afford something that you can't afford, because then that's not going to be self-care. That's just going to cause another stressor. So like, what works for you? Like you said, even if it is that, you know, bath at the end of the night, when you tuck the kids into bed, like I get that. I'm a working mom. So it's not like I can always just run away with my girlfriends for the weekend if I want to. So like, what can I do that is attainable and sustainable, like that I know that I can continue to show up for myself?
And that's such a good point too, because once again, I think it's so easy to see it as like something that's so unattainable. And if I can't reach this, then there's no point. And I know for me, I thought I'll just take care of myself when I have time. There will never be time, because it's like, oh, well, there's another paper to work on. There's another task I need to do. And I didn't see it as a priority. So do you believe in kind of scheduling time for yourself and things to do that aren't maybe, you know, work related, or you could call self-care that you need?
Yeah, I think we make it so easy to kind of not stick to our own schedule, or like, you know, stick up for ourselves when it's something that we want to do. We're always like, oh, well, I'll push that off. I'll do it later. And then that kind of ends up biting us in the butt, you know, like where we get sick or something like that, because we're not taking care of ourselves. So if we can schedule that little bit of time in, you know, maybe you can't do it every day, but maybe you can do it every week. It also gives you something to strive for and look forward to. Sometimes it's like nice to treat yourself like, okay, if I can make it through these 2 days, I know that like I'm going to get to that exercise class that I like, or I'm going to have that coffee. So it's nice to look forward to it. And then once you get there, it feels so good because you're doing it for yourself and you kept that promise to yourself. And I think especially when you're an anxious person, it's can be hard to trust, and especially self-trust. So if you can continue to build that relationship with yourself that like, look, I made this commitment and I'm sticking to it, that can be so valuable to your self-worth and your self-esteem.
Definitely. I know, especially as someone who's really anxious, I've had that all or nothing mentality, or thinking I'm not doing enough if I'm not completing these tasks. And then it just gets so overwhelming. And then it's just so stressful. So as someone, you've talked about that you experience anxiety as well. Do you think growing up, and that was discussed, like mental health, do you think, you know, you kind of, it became normalized for you, like, oh, I'm the good student, you know, you fit this role? Because I know for me, I continue to fit like the good girl role, the people pleaser. That was a huge thing, a people pleaser role. And that led to like eventually needing to do everything perfectly and kind of being anxious about outcomes in general. So do you mind maybe sharing like how that was for you growing up?
Yeah, absolutely. Mental health was not discussed. It's not something that we really talked about. And I've always been like a very feeling type person, like a very emotional type person. So even as a kid, so you know, I'd always want to like talk about things if they were bothering me or things like that. And I grew up with a single mom, so she was working a lot. So a lot of times it was just like, okay, like that's a lot, like relax type of thing. Or, you know, I was the dramatic one because there was always something that I wanted to talk about. So then I would really like keep things in, and that would make me anxious. Like if something was bothering me, like, am I just being dramatic? Like, is anybody really going to care? So I started to have like that type of perception that I just wanted to not cause any waves, not cause any problems. So again, that perfectionist mentality. And I think I did carry that into my life as I got older, as I went to college, as I got jobs, like, okay, I don't want to make waves. I'm just going to do what they're told and like not really take care of myself, because I wouldn't check in with myself. I would second guess what I thought that I needed or what was going on. And I think that definitely stems from that period of time. Yeah. From childhood.
Yeah, thank you for sharing that. And I definitely can relate to that in a sense of like trying to keep the peace. And I think one of the harder parts of that, especially with anxiety and growing up, kind of trying to keep the peace, you may be like validated externally of, you know, you're the good kid or you're doing a good job. And when you get that validation, it kind of like fires you up to maybe continue doing the same thing of like, okay, well, I'll continue to work hard and never take breaks. I'll continue to do my best and not really take care of myself or put other people's needs before my own. And that can obviously lead to burnout as well. So, you know, you've discussed stress and burnout, and I think many people may see that as like work having to do with career, but that can be emotional burnout. Can you discuss what that may look like?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, for a lot of us, avoidance is a huge thing. So like, oh, if we feel something bad, we want to just like avoid it or push it down. And again, that stuff can come back up. It resurfaces. So it's just kind of like this bobbling thing. We continue to push it down. And then it can show up in different ways. Again, like burnout, where we're just feeling completely like shut down, or we could make ourselves physically ill. So I know a lot of times you see, especially therapists saying like, feel your feelings. And people are like, you know, what the hell does that mean? But it really is like, allow yourself to, you know, feel those feelings, because they are trying to tell you something. Like, you know, maybe feelings aren't always factual, but they are clues as to what's going on. Like maybe you need more of something. Maybe you need more connection. Maybe you need a break. So really like listening to your body and listening to what's going on, and allowing yourself to not push that down, but really like engage and give into what you need. And I think, you know, that can be really helpful to eliminate that type of emotional burnout.
Definitely. And I'm glad you mentioned the feel your feelings, because it sounds so simple and obvious, but it's really hard to do if you're not used to it. And so I want to talk about the cultural aspect of understanding, you know, your intersectional identities and how that may affect stress or even intergenerational trauma. Like I know for me, my mom, my grandma, they, you know, from Iran, they've experienced the revolution. So there was that anxiety and stress that just like was passed on generationally. And I kind of, you know, took that on even though I wasn't there. So can you maybe talk about, as a Black woman or in your own life, what you've experienced, whether it's generational, seeing that racial trauma, how that even plays into stress and anxiety?
Yeah, absolutely. Generationally, you know, seeing like my mom and my grandmother, they, you know, had children young. So there was a lot of that stress and that pressure to like kind of have this role of take on the family and keep everybody together and keep everything together. So that was a lot of like, you saw a lot of frustration, a lot of anxiety. I feel like now looking back, I can see like that's what it was. There's that. And then, you know, just being a Black woman in America, you know, dealing with that, you know, criticisms and kind of where we grew up and what that was like. So that pressure of like trying to figure out like where I fit in and what that meant and how to be okay with me and my identity. I think a lot of that shaped me and in the way that like I show up and how I feel about myself. And as I got older and did more work on myself, it made sense. But yeah, I definitely think like carrying all of that first, as well as trying to figure out who I was heavy at times. And I can see that in a lot of other people, a lot of, you know, women that I work with, especially in my practice, I can kind of see, you know, parallels.
Thank you for sharing that. And I think that's an important message to take away, that sometimes it's so underlying, we may not realize that parts of our identities are affecting us without even realizing. And we kind of go on thinking like, oh, well, everything around me is fine. And I know with mental health, I know a lot of people have heard that maybe from people who are older saying like, you shouldn't be depressed or you shouldn't feel anxious. Everything around you seems fine or it's been great. And that's not really how mental health works. So can you talk about the importance of maybe validating other people who are dealing with mental health and what you would say, I guess, to someone who has been invalidated for so long and does not have that support?
Yeah, I definitely think, you know, culturally, I know, and especially in my family, it was like, oh, what do you want to be? A therapist? Like, I don't really know. Like, not because mental health wasn't something that we talked about a lot. So I feel like it was like strange, and it went back to that dramatic piece. So kind of realizing the importance of it and talking about it with people that were like-minded. And of course, my family is super supportive now and has come around and is huge advocates on mental health. But I think when it's something you don't know, you don't know. So it seems foreign and it seems scary. So if you feel like you are in that place where maybe, you know, the people around you aren't really validating, then who can you go to? Where can you turn? And I think like that's the great thing about, you know, certain parts of social media and things like that, where you can find like-minded people and you can feel validated and you can feel like, oh, wait, I'm not the only one going through this. And I think like that's what I would say when it feels like you're the only one. It's remembering, you know, that you're not. I don't want to, you know, obviously be that toxic positivity of like, oh, no worries, but because like there are worries, but remembering that you made it through a lot of dark times and you're continuing to grow. You did it before, so who's to say that you can't do it again? I think remembering that, and really just being true and honest to yourself that like those are your feelings and they are valid and they are trying to show you something. So don't turn away from them.
Definitely. And I know in those moments of like spiraling with anxiety, it can feel like the end of the world when you're in that moment. And for that person, you know, that's their reality. So I totally understand. And in general, do you think that social media plays, I mean, I know it plays a huge part in comparison. That's not really, I mean, that's kind of obvious, but how have you seen that it really affects people maybe, especially with anxiety and the hustle culture of like, you know, I'm not doing enough, or you see like 19-year-olds who are millionaires and you think I'm in my late 20s and like, what am I doing? And you start to spiral. And so is that something that you think is a part, at least for me, a form of self-care is like putting my phone away and following people who make me feel good, like counts that, you know, are more real in that sense. So is that something you think in your practice you've noticed throughout the past few years has played more into effect into how people feel about themselves and their self-esteem?
Yeah, absolutely. I feel like I've seen it grow more and more, just like of my generation with, you know, the internet and seeing it and how people are really going off of how many likes they're getting, or like you said, comparing like, well, this person accomplished all of these things. So I really think it's putting in things into perspective of we're only seeing a snapshot. So like reminding ourselves of that. And then, like you said, like curating who you're following and what you're consuming. I think we forget how impactful that can be. So like we have the opportunity to like, if this doesn't feel good, if this is making you feel bad, like why are you continuing to view it when you don't have to? So really like curating your feed to be who and what makes you feel good and making better decisions on what is actually realistic versus like, what is this expectation? Like, what's my intention behind it? Why am I going after this? Why am I trying to live up to this standard? Is it because like, I want this career. I want to turn this hobby into a side hustle, or because I feel like I have to, you know, everything has to be so like hustle and money driven. And like our worth is based on our productivity. Like, what about like rest and just being a human? Like, that's important too. I think we forget that. So everything doesn't have to be so hustling. Everything doesn't have to be a moneymaker or for some type of accolade. It can just be because you wanted to be it, like, and you like it.
Exactly. I'm so glad you mentioned that. And I've seen so many posts about, especially during lockdown, people reminding, you know, others and saying like, if you didn't write a whole book during lockdown, you're fine. If you just made it through a pandemic and, you know, a really hard time, that's okay. That's more than enough. And I think there is that pressure now because it seems like it's so easy to just post online or like start a new business or side hustle. It's so in. And that brings a lot of stress too. And it's like, if you're just trying to get through the day, that can be more than enough. So I totally agree with you. And so what would you tell to someone who, you know, during the pandemic, especially in lockdown, maybe this is the first time they're really experiencing some levels of anxiety or feeling like they're not enough or they've lost their job. I know there's a lot of job loss and uncertainty in general. And it is hard, especially to think like, oh, I moved back with my parents, or I lost my job, or I'm seeing all these people doing this and that, and I feel behind. What would you tell to someone who feels like they're stuck?
Yeah, I would definitely say that like nobody was prepared for this or knew how to deal with this. And we still are, you know, this is a collective trauma. And, you know, I think we go into this crisis mode and yours may look different from mine or, you know, anybody else's. So it's really remembering like you're doing whatever you need to do right now to keep yourself safe and to keep yourself okay and going. So if that looks like I'm just barely surviving going day to day, or you did create this amazing, you know, company, it's what you needed to do in that moment to survive. So remembering that and remembering that this wasn't something that we planned for or knew how to do. So no one knows really how to feel or how to show up. We're all just doing the best that we can. And we're still going through it. I think like people forget that too. Like we're still surviving it. We're still figuring it out. Every day is so uncertain. So try to focus on the things that we can control, which is like, you know, how you're showing up for yourself, your self-care, how you're reacting to things, who you're following, those type of things. Like, what can you control while there is so much uncertainty?
Definitely. And I think because like maybe kids are going back to school or people are going back to work, we're trying to like push this normalcy where it's not, no matter what, it's not the same as like 2019. We can't pretend like it is. And I think we need to remember that emotionally, mentally, even if we are physically showing up to places we need to be or doing things we were doing before, we still need to remember that it's very normal that this is a change. It's not normal is what I'm trying to say. I know we discuss stress and burnout and stress in general, maybe how to manage it, but what are some signs that you may be headed in the direction toward burnout? You may think, well, I'm experiencing normal stress, you know, I'm taking care of myself, but what are some signs that you may be headed in that direction and you need to kind of stop and check in with yourself?
Yeah, I think like, especially when it comes to like work and that type of things, like, are you showing up differently there? Is your mood completely changed? Of course, there are those times where like I wake up and I don't want to go, right? Like everybody has those. But is that becoming the everyday? Do you feel like you're not able to do things that you did well? Are you feeling physically ill? Like, how are you feeling physically? Are you not able to show up for yourself in the ways that you were before? Are you not able to complete tasks the way that you were before? Are you feeling, you know, drained and out of it? And also like, there's a lot of hopelessness along with burnout. Like, are you feeling hopeless and like not good enough, or that you feel like you can't go on with, you know, doing what you're doing? That's where, you know, we definitely need to take a step back and put some things into place. And I also think we think like, okay, we're burnt out or we're stressed out, so we're just going to take this weekend off and then we're going to jump right back into it. And then in a couple of days, we're like, wait, we feel the same way. So nothing changed. So what really can we eliminate or remove, or what do we need to add, right? Because what's happening isn't working. So what can we do to make it better for ourselves?
That's such a good point too. I think in those cases, we may think like, oh, taking an hour or two off is fine when we're not noticing the other signs. And especially with counseling and therapy, I think many people may think they have to be at the very bottom or they have to really be struggling to see someone. So in general, for someone who does have the privilege to see a therapist or counselor, great to see someone, even if you're not at your very lowest point. I think a lot of people think I have to be struggling at my most to see someone, or like, I'm fine, I don't need it, like I'm not struggling. And there's that misconception. Or what would you say to someone who is kind of hesitant to see a therapist, but they've been considering it?
Yeah, I mean, I definitely think, why not be more proactive than reactive? We're always trying to clean up the messes and kind of like, you know, swim when we're drowning, but why not get in there beforehand? And I always say to people, when in your life can you go and talk to somebody for a full hour when it's just completely about you? Like, I don't know, as a parent, that doesn't happen often for me. So like just having that person where it's like, I'm going through this and they're listening to you and they're validating you and they're hearing you. There's nothing like that. It doesn't have to be, you know, the world is burning and on fire, but just to have that time for you to talk about things that are coming up or maybe uncertainties, there's nothing like that. So I feel like if you're on the cusp of deciding like, is this for me? Should I try this? What's the harm in trying?
Definitely. I'm very glad you mentioned that. And I can relate because I remember going into therapy for the first time being like, sorry, I'm talking too much. And I'm like, no, this is the point of therapy. This is like the whole point. I was like apologizing for taking the time. It's so funny. But overall, this show is about living your most authentic life. Everyone has a different definition of what this means. Every guest does. So I want to ask you, what does living your most authentic life mean to you?
Yeah, I think I'm still learning that every day. But I think for me, it's really being intentional about the decisions that I make and stop saying yes when I want to say no, and feeling like I'm doing this because it's what's best for me, and chasing after what's best for me without caring about, you know, what somebody else is going to think or say. Just really being true to myself and my needs and not feeling guilt and shame about that.
I love that. And so lastly, what would you tell to someone who maybe, whether or not they're anxious, but they feel that their role and their identity, they're defined by their level of productivity, or they're defined by, you know, how much they do, their accomplishments, and they are feeling burnt out and they kind of want to start taking care of themselves and maybe letting go of some things they've been holding on to. What would you tell to someone who is trying to do that, but they feel like maybe a long period of their life has been defined by how productive they are and what they do, an external validation?
Yeah, I think I would say that rest is a necessity. It's not something that we just get because we work hard. Like, we need it to continue to grow. And if you don't take the time to stop and really allow yourself to have that rest, your body will do it for you. So since I'm this person too, that likes to be in control, why not take control and put that rest in for yourself and make sure that you're taking care of yourself on that end so you can continue to show up and work in a way that you want to.
Exactly. I appreciate that. And I think an important reminder is that, you know, self-care, taking care of yourself is helping other people in your life. If you're not your best self, you can't show up as the best employee and partner and parent and so on. So I'm really thankful for you for being here and for the work you do. And I want to lastly ask you if there's anything coming up next for you that you'd like to share and where listeners can give you a follow.
Yeah, sure. So you can follow me on Instagram at Amber Burst Anxiety. It's also my TikTok handle. So I have the Anxiety Lab, my membership exclusively for women experiencing anxiety. I hope to be opening the wait list. I'm going to be making some changes. So you can definitely head over to theanxietylab.com and sign up for that so you can get all the information first.
Amazing. Well, thank you so much for being here, Amber. I appreciate it and hope you have a great weekend.
Thanks, you too.
I hope you enjoyed the conversation I had with Amber. I'm really thankful that she was here and shared her experience with anxiety, stress, and burnout. And I hope it inspired you and reminded you to check in with yourself. So I'd love to know what you were able to take away from this episode, what resonated with you. You can let me know. You can let Amber know. Once again, you can visit her website, vitalitybehavioral.com or theanxietylab.com. And you can also follow her on Instagram at amber_versus_anxiety. And once again, you can find me on Instagram and TikTok at Trust and Thrive. And if you've been enjoying the show and would like to let me know, let others know, please feel free to send them this episode, if you think they would relate. You can leave a rating and review on Apple iTunes, Apple Podcasts as well. And that really, really helps the show. And like I said, there are a lot of exciting conversations that are coming soon. So I hope you subscribe and stay tuned so you don't miss a new one. That being said, I hope you have a wonderful rest of your week. You check in with yourself, take care of yourself, be honest with yourself, which can be the hardest thing to do sometimes. And I will catch you all next Thrive Thursday.